Welcome, everyone. Hello, hello. We are on training call number four today. Kata in French, Field in German. My language is limited. Hopefully everybody's good. Today we're getting into anger and healthy aggression, part one. There is a part two in 2 weeks. So we take a break from anger and healthy aggression next week, and then we go to part two the week after. I would love to know, before we dive into the theory, how is everyone doing in the lessons? This is the week where we get into diaphragms. Has anybody yet tried diaphragms? If you have, let us know in the chat. Obviously, those listening to the recording, I'll pop out some chat words in a moment here. And also, what are you finding that you're naturally starting to do without going into the recordings? I know orienting is often one that people start doing naturally, following impulse. The one that I think surprises a lot of people is potent posture. Is anybody noticing more awareness when they're on their feet? Whether when you're brushing your teeth, cleaning up stuff in your kitchen. So thank you. We've got a few. I'll read a few out here before we get started. So if you need to get settled, grab something, now's the time to do it. So someone said, yes, tried the diaphragms already. Hands on the adrenals and the heart. Someone said, I find myself orienting naturally as I wake up. That's super good. So someone's waking up and they're just naturally looking, feeling, seeing, sensing. Someone said they found the diaphragms relaxing, titrating. The seven steps. So seven steps to de-stress. This is a ebook that is on your additional resources. Real simple seven steps. It brings in orienting, pausing, feeling. Someone said a lot of anger this week. Following impulse. So there you go. This is the time when, as we start to build more capacity, as we start to get into, these joints, the kidney adrenals, as there's little bits of less survival stress, it allows these emotions like anger to pop through a bit more. There's more safety on board. That's what having more anger means, interestingly enough, right? When there's more safety, there's more internal permission to express these things. Someone said, I'm pacing myself more, noticing, being aware of sensations, posture. I experienced the shoulder and diaphragms, and that's where anger is coming up. Think about this. So if you haven't gotten into the shoulder and diaphragms lessons yet, that's okay, but they're up here in this chest area. And if you need to do a big roar, right, or really assert your boundaries, or even scream or shout or growl, you need openness in this upper area. If it's collapsed, right, that freeze, collapse, I'm kind of going into that posture of collapse right now. Imagine if you go into this collapse position, it's very hard to assert and express. But the flip side, there could be someone with really good posture and really upright, but they also can't express the anger because the tissues inside are so tight and rigid and frozen. So posture is not the dead giveaway. It's really what's going on internally. This is common, panic attacks and heart palpitations. So this is something that is super common. This is something that occurred to me about 5 years ago, started to happen. And I was smart and I still went and got checked by the doctors. I think it's important to do that if you can, but there is nothing serious. There's nothing going on. It was old survival stress. So again, when we're starting to open up our system, that old survival stress will start to funnel up, and that's the fight, flight. Panic and anxiety is nothing more than survival stress coming up and out. So when we can really feel into it that way, we start to see it in a different light. All right. Thank you, everyone. I'm gonna get into, so we'll close down the chat, not close it down, but we will get back into the training. I'll answer one question that just came up. Do you find that the doctor will validate that? No. Nope. So, you know, if I have a broken bone, I'm gonna go and get a validation that there's a broken bone from a doctor, a radiologist, you know. So I choose what I say to my GP. I don't try to inform her about what I know. All she knows is that myself and, say, my husband Seth were her only patients who are not on medications, pharmaceuticals. So she just thinks that's weird. and we just go, okay. And we go on, and I refuse a lot of things that she asks us to do. And, you know, if there's an opening where they're wondering about that, then I'll ask or tell them, but I normally don't. I normally don't. That's not their concern. And I know what I know about my body. So I think you have to pick your battles with the medical profession, and use them for what they are very good to, which is good for, which is usually emergency medicine, right? Not these chronic issues. All right. Let's get into this. So again, reminder, we'll keep the chat fairly quiet as we get into the training call. If there's anything that needs to be asked regarding something in the moment, wait to see, because I might answer it as we go through the training call. But Leah is here to answer any questions that might pop up. And if there's anything really, really long, we'll guide you to the general question thread in the program site. All right. I'm gonna have a little water here. And I just want to be very clear, I've got nothing against modern medicine. I would be either an amputee or in a wheelchair or permanently on crutches if it wasn't for fixing my broken kneecap and all the ligaments that have been destroyed. So there's a time and a place, I think, for that stuff. But a lot of the things that we are learning about here often don't infiltrate into the medical system, and that's okay. So before we get into the first portion here, page one, which is feelings, emotions, and sensations, just take a second to remind yourself of some of the basics of your nervous system health practices. So bring your focus into your body, into your environment. Maybe check in and just see if you've been paying attention to yourself today. And some of you, maybe. Some of you, maybe so-so. Some of you, maybe not. So take this time, everyone here live and everyone on the recording, to just reconnect to that ground, reconnect to your eyes, how they orient. Maybe they don't want to orient, maybe they want to close. Maybe they're sleepy. Also, reconnect to anywhere in your body that might need some touch. Is there anywhere that feels like it needs a little connection? There anywhere that needs a little movement? How do you notice your breathing as you start to tune into some of these things? Does anything shift? Even if you're sitting, can you tune into your potent posture? Is there something off balance, asymmetrical? And just in this space for us here live, just for those not here live, we've got about 240 humans here. So a big chunk of people, that would be a very full auditorium. So for everyone here live, just acknowledge all your peers who are showing up today. You might see them on your screen. I personally love the gallery view, so it's good to see other faces. Just know that you're not in this alone, that we're all here interested and keen and curious. We're the crazy trailblazers of this work. And then for those on the recording, just tune into the energy that's here live. And just also feel that connection to those peers who were here for the live call. So some say there is no time. So those listening to the recording are here with us now, and those live are with those on the recording. So just a reminder to keep recycling these pieces of awareness, connecting to the ground, connecting to the body, connecting to the environment. As your system sees fit, as we go through the training call today, there's a little more. Well, everything is theory, obviously, on the training call, but I'm going to read a little bit during this training call. So, a little less pen to paper today, but a little bit to start with. So, the first thing up at the top here on page one, feelings, emotions, and sensations. So, the first line, where do feelings come from? So feelings is the first word. Where do feelings come from? And to just define feelings, that would be anger, sadness, fear, joy, surprise, disgust. Those are the main, we could say, set biological mammalian emotions. Because mammals also have other mammals have these. We'll get into disgust a little bit more in future calls or ones down the road where we talk about toxic shame. But I think we all know what fear is. I think we all know what sadness is. We all know what joy is, surprise, and then disgust. So where do feelings come from? So the next line, they come from the body. Our body, this vessel of ours. Next line down, they especially come from the organs, our organs, also known as, or AKA, the fancy word there is the viscera. So, lungs, heart, gut. Obviously, you've been learning about the kidneys and adrenals. And we'll get into this a bit more. But they especially come from the organs, also known as the viscera. These parts of our body also house our intuition. 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 Also known as the interoception, our gut sense, or our sixth sense. So I think the idea of the sixth sense is not really new anymore, but it's this sense, this knowing that something's being felt, that quality of just knowing I should do this, not that. And I don't want to assume, but I'm going to assume a little bit that most of us have had a little bit of that sixth sense, that intuition. And some might be finding that it's becoming more clear as we regulate, as you regulate, as you get the survival stress out of your system. What also is nice about this more accurate intuition and interoception is we start to have more alignment. This is what one could say a more soul spiritual word, but just alignment with people, finding the right people that we want in our life, realizing these are not my people, these are my people. This is what I want to do with my day. Running into people that we haven't seen in many, many years. You know, there's this alignment and as Kathy Kane, one of my instructors, would say, our field is becoming a bit more expansive in finding those things and people that we're meant to connect with. And yes, I'm using feelings and emotions interchangeably. So I kind of go back and forth. I think too, this work is less, it's less like a math problem where there's variables and an actual solution. When it comes to this work, there's a little more gray zone. And so I often will use these words interchangeably. So the next line down, this is why we want to bring self-awareness, intention, and attention to the, and then there's a bunch of words here, our diaphragms, our joints, kidney adrenals, gut. Now, this could be a run-on sentence and it could have our movement. Soon you'll get into the layers of the body, working with the skin, the fascia, the bone, the muscle. All of this, the fluids, our blood, our bone marrow. So there's a deep knowing in our body. All these things, and we need to bring awareness to these spaces that are often shut down or in some form of survival stress. So, next one down, for example, the diaphragms encase our organs. The diaphragms, and as you'll learn in the lessons in Lab 5, there's the true diaphragm, which is the diaphragm that when you inhale, it goes down, drops down, and when you exhale, it lifts up. So when we hear the word diaphragm, we often think of the respiratory diaphragm. But as you'll learn in the diaphragm lessons, in osteopathic traditions, there are diaphragms at the level of the head, the midline here. Some might call that the third eye, but it's also where the pineal gland is and other places like the hypothalamus pituitary, at the throat. Someone calls it the throat chakra, but it's also where the thymus is. The heart, which has, or sorry, thyroid, made a mistake there. Thyroid is the throat, thymus is the heart. And then you've got the diaphragm, true diaphragm respiratory, the kidney adrenals are there. And then you have the bowl of the pelvis, the pelvic diaphragm, and that's where, of course, we have our sex organs, right? So the testes and the ovaries, which are essential for life. And then there are diaphragms also at the feet. So there's all these levels. And so to finish up this final line here, for example, the diaphragms encase our organs. So they encase our feelings. We could then add our emotions, our sensations. And there's language in our, in at least the English language. I'm sure those of you who don't speak English have similar sayings. But when you feel a little nervous, what do you say is in your tummy? I know someone knows this. What's fluttering around in your tummy when you're nervous? Butterflies. German, what is it? Schmetterling, I think. So there's these butterflies. What do we say when we can't speak? There's a something in my throat. Frog. See, we know these things. We could probably sit here, or a lump. Yeah, a lump in my throat, a frog in my throat. So we have a knife in my back. That's a terrible image, but I feel like I've just been stabbed in my back, right? This I'm in shock. Ants in my pants. This is actually a fun game. There's lots of ways that we say these things. And we often, I don't think, really connect that is a sensation in the body. And if we were to, yeah, monkey on my back, get that monkey off my back, right? Tension, stress, strain, it's weighing me down. So we have these sayings in our language that I think depict that we do know there are sensations inside of us. And one thing to start to do as you feel and as you get more alive in your interoception and your viscera is to be like, oh, yeah, someone says, cat's got my tongue, chip on my shoulder, ears tingling when other ones talk, bee in the bonnet. So yeah, these are fun. We'll have to make a note of all these. My ex-husband used to say when he got shivers up his spine, someone just walked over my grave. I don't know where he got that one from. He was British or is British, so maybe that's a British saying. So when you start to feel these sensations, these tingles, it's best to notice them and talk to them. And as someone just said, butterflies when we're in love. Yes. That when you fall in love and you feel that tingling, that there's also an element of excitement, but there also is a little maybe fear in that because it's new, it's fresh, right? So these are all very interesting sayings that we have. All right, next one down. Living with chronic stress, toxic stress, and untreated early trauma. So when we're living with chronic stress, toxic stress, and untreated early trauma, the line says our body spaces, so these diaphragms, they tighten. So that's the first word. They tighten and shut down. And this cuts off our capacity. That's the next word. To have self-awareness to our emotions, feelings, sensations. So I'll read it again. When our body spaces tighten or shut down, and this cuts off our capacity to have self-awareness to our emotions, feelings, and sensations. So if we go back to that image of that swimming pool and beach ball analogy, this is still what we're talking about here. If you imagine that swimming pool filled with tons of stress, toxic stress, untreated early trauma, it is so tight, you can't move anything in that pool, right? You can just imagine it. If you had a little kiddie pool and it was filled with balls, you can even hear the sound of them rubbing together, right? And to move them out takes a little effort. But once they start to come out, or once you start to build your capacity, there's more flow. This is why, as someone mentioned earlier, as we start to gain more capacity, oddly, we might feel more anxiety, quote unquote, because the survival stress is coming up and out. And this is where one could say a lot of people go the wrong way because they think something's wrong as they start to do their healing practices, or they go to yoga, or they go to meditation, or they get more healthy, or they're in a safer environment. And they start to feel panic and anxiety. And that to us, typically is something's wrong. But what that is no more than survival stress coming up and out. And so this is where education is very, very important. All right. So hypothetical question. I'm going to have a little more water here. Remember to connect with all of your parts and your environment as we go through the next bit. So hypothetical question. Let's just say you encounter a tiger or any other threat that could harm your life. I live somewhere where there are no tigers, but there are definitely bears and there are definitely mountain lions, also known as cougars. Thank God I've never come across a mountain lion, but I have come across many bears. And there is an adrenaline that goes through your body, even when you know that bear has no interest in you. Black bears don't care. They just want to eat berries and be left alone. But there is an impulse that comes out. So, first question I have here, what makes you afraid of it? And then I have three options. Have a read of those. Is it the body's response to the threat? The conscious thought about the threat? And my third option, an emotion connected to the threat. So, just for fun, what do you think? Is it the body, the thought, or the emotion? Got the body, emotion, all three. Body, all three, the first, all. So a bit of everything. So we'll keep you hanging. So we'll go to the next page, page two. Page two. So this is some research, which I rarely quote, but this is some really interesting research that Peter Levine brought to our attention in some of our trainings around emotions. And so there was a woman who's long passed. Her name was Nina Bull. And she wrote a book in 1951, or it was published in 1951, called The Attitude Theory of Emotion. You will not find this book on Amazon. You may find it in an old medical library in the annals of a basement somewhere. It is not something that you can just find. I've tried to find it, but I have found some stuff online. So this is what Bull was researching, and it's odd that her last name is Bull, hence our big animal metaphors. So Bull's research found that it was the preparation of the nervous system. So this is actual research she did with like gadgets hooked up to people and giving them threats and such. So she found that it was the preparation of the nervous system, specifically the motor movements to prepare for action, which then gives rise to the emotion and feeling. So, based on this research, and of course, research isn't rule, but we know enough about how fear responses and threats do register in the body. It's the body. It's the nervous system. In this case, the motor movements. Motor is just a fancy word for muscle. It is the contraction of those hip flexors. It is the curling of the toes. It is the hands starting to contract. It's the tightening of the throat. It's that posture getting ready to run or fight, or, it doesn't have to be an animal. I often use the example when I talk about procedural memories. If you can recall Biology of Stress video number five, I may have said in that video, a ball is coming towards your head and you're on a soccer field or a football field. What do if you see it coming and you know you're not going to be able to headbutt it like a professional soccer pro? You're going to instantly bring your hands up. It's a motor movement, right? So, next line down. In other words, our neuromuscular, that's the word, activations are primary in the development and experiencing of our emotive sensory state. The reason why these motor actions, neuromuscular, it's preparing us to act, to flee, to fight. Someone mentioned, what about the gut? What do you know about what you've been learning? What happens when there's a sympathetic response? Does the gut go into easy rest digest? It goes into shutdown. It stops. Or in some cases, it quickly voids. If anyone here has ever been scared so bad, we say it, I was so scared I peed my pants. Right? Classic Julia Roberts from Pretty Woman saying, right? Or we also sometimes will poop our pants, we'll defecate. It's a way to void. In the animal kingdom, it's also a way to lighten ourselves so we can go faster, right? And it is often an automatic response. The system goes into shutdown, or in order to fight, it releases everything. But in this case, it's the action, it's that muscle that moves us. Next line down, another reminder that working via the body, so that's the next word, the third word there. Another reminder that working with the body is essential for working with our emotions. So I'll go to the second bullet. I'll go back. So again, in other words, our neuromuscular activations are primary in the development and experiencing of our emotive sensory states. Another reminder that working via the body is essential for working with our emotions. Next line down. I'll have a little more context in a second here. So even far back as her time, she was researching in the 1880s to 1968. She believed that it was important, and these are her words, to recognize a somatic pattern. And from here, one could create a practice to shift that motor muscular pattern deliberately. And then I have in brackets, sound familiar, right? So even back then, she realized to shift out of these fear responses, these preparation responses, even if it's a perceived threat, and this is what you will learn and do more of as you practice kidney adrenals more and more and more. Who here has found, and they know, that they go into a stress response when there's no tiger in your living room? It might just happen, right? We know this. We know this. You think about something that you don't want to do, and it can create a response like there is a tiger in the room, for example. So we know this. And so again, this is why we, as she says, go back to these somatic patterns. This is why I'm often saying, can you reconnect to the ground? Can you reconnect to the environment? Can you see, wow, there is no tiger. It's just my space, my plants, my food, my refrigerator, the clouds, the dirt. As we know, as you're learning, and you'll keep learning, especially when you cover and go into the early developmental calls and such, if we had a lot of trauma early on in utero, developmental, even transgenerationally, there will be this sense that nothing is safe. Even though you were never born into the savannah with wild animals, you know, coming into your camp. So it doesn't have to be a wild animal, but it's this sense of there's something not right. There's something not safe. And so this is why we have to go in and work with those physiological patterns of the muscles, of the adrenals, of the gut, of the heart space, of the throat. The throat's shut down. How are we going to get this in light of today's call, this anger and healthy aggression out, for example? Okay, next part down underneath the reference. So she believed that seeing, sensing and feeling the tiger puts you, so seeing it, sensing it, feeling it, it's not a thought. It's like a, it's the same as hairs standing up on your back, right? Goosebumps, if you've ever had those, not necessarily due to fear, but say you're really cold, or all of a sudden you get really hot and there's a sweat or there's an expression of heat, that happens instantly. One moment you're fine, the next you're like sweating bullets, as we would say, right? Or we are shivering. These are somatic autonomic responses that are going directly out of the autonomic nervous system. So we're not thinking about them. So again, she believed that seeing the tiger or the threat puts you into an immediate action to, and then the words are run, flee, and it is the act. That's the next word. It is the act of running and fleeing, or it could be fighting, that then makes us afraid. Then the fear comes in. Now, this happens in a matter of microseconds. It's very fast, right? Just like if you are chopping vegetables at your kitchen counter and you drop the knife and you're wearing bare feet, you don't think, right? I'm sure everyone's done that at some point. You drop the knife and poof, there's no thought, oh, I better move my foot. I better jump back. It happens at that muscular level. It's very, very quick. All right. So take a second I'm going to have some water. So just reorient to your surroundings. Reconnect to the ground. This ability to pause and separate these responses, right? These, we could say, fight, flight, freeze responses from actuality is what we're working with here. If we've been in a soup of survival stress since birth or before birth, our system has been wired through neuroplasticity to either expect threat, expect danger, to shut down, to fight, be defensive, confrontational, hide, collapse. And as you're learning, that is exhausting. Not just generally speaking, but at a metabolic level, at a metabolic level, it takes energy to stay in these survival stress patterns. So again, I want to kind of zoom out to the whole body that is smart body, smart mind, and all the lessons that are happening, all of the practices, all of the connections, the learning is to help not only grow capacity and take the swimming pools out of swimming or take the beach balls out of the swimming pool, it's to reinvigorate and remember, oh, I don't have to respond in this stress-based way when something wrong happens that isn't life-threatening in the moment, but my pattern has been wired to go into these habits, right? And so this ability to get back into the body and shift it, and as she says here, recognize a somatic pattern. Oh, my tummy is clenched. Right? Some people have been asking about the gut tightening. It tightens, but it's the muscles around the gut and the fascia. It's not, the organs can contract, obviously, but it's a totally different kind of muscle, the stomach muscle. It's not the like bicep muscles. It's a different kind of muscle. It's called smooth muscle. And that is dictated by the autonomic nervous system. But if you take your hand and squeeze it and relax it, that's conscious. If I, you know, say squeeze your hands or do some bicep, you know, get really strong or dig your feet into the ground, that is a conscious skeletal muscle movement that you are doing with conscious awareness, different than the expression of, I got to jump away from that falling knife. So part of our work here and why we bring in movement and Feldenkrais work, for example, what we'll get into more, and soft, gentle work and eye work and all this, is we're trying to get you to feel your body and have control over it and use your thoughts to shift strain patterns, but also use your intention and thoughts to shift the tension around, say, your kidney adrenals, which is what was last week or 2 weeks ago. And in this week, the diaphragms. How can we lighten the load and lessen the tension around the organs via these diaphragms? All right, so next line down. So again, review all comes back to the body and its responses. So this is a quote that I think is just so perfect from one of Gabor Mate's book, When the Body Says No. And this is just straight out of this book. He writes, awareness also means learning what the signs of stress are in our bodies. So learning the signs of stress in our bodies, how our bodies telegraph us when our minds have missed the cues. In both human and animal studies, it has been observed that the physiological stress response is a more accurate gauge of the organism's real experience than either conscious awareness or observed behavior. This is a fancy way of saying everything we've been saying, which is we want to really start to recognize these physiological stress responses, these survival stress responses. This ability to sense, wow, I think I'm going into a bit of freeze. I'm starting to disconnect. I don't really see straight. I'm not thinking straight. Or Wow, my heart is all of a sudden beating, and I'm not running or doing anything exhaustive. I'm just sitting here. That is a physiological stress response, for example. So when we can learn to listen to these things and then go, oh, okay, this is a survival response I'm feeling. I'm going to sense this. And this goes back to the training call. Do you remember when not to resource? Remember this one? When not to orient, when not to take a deep breath, or when you should do that, right? Oh, I'm feeling this tension or this activation. I need to grab my resource. I need to grab something. I need to contain myself. I need to move. I need to express to help stay connected and contained with that experience. But not disconnect, dissociate, or go into more activation. As you grow more capacity, as you get more masterful at being with that activation, you might not need any resource. You might not need any orienting practice. You might just be able to sit and feel and watch it come up and come down. But again, this comes back to this awareness to really be able to listen to these signals and know what they are and know what you might need to do in that moment. All right, page three. So I've got some words here to go through, so get comfy. Or read along with me if you'd like out loud. Totally up to you. So, page three, this is from one of Peter's books, Peter Levine, In an Unspoken Voice, How the Body Releases Trauma and Restores Goodness. First paragraph there is on a chapter on emotion, the body, and change. And this is again speaking to why working with the body is so important. So the reason the bodily felt sense is has the power to creatively influence our behaviors is precisely because it is involuntary. Feelings are not evoked through acts of will. They give us information that does not come from the conscious mind. Emotional intelligence and emotional literacy communicate through the felt sense and somatic markers and are vitally important to the conduct of our lives. He then continues, the balanced attention to sensation, feeling, cognition, and élan vital, which is life energy, remains the emergent therapeutic future for transforming the whole person. So this statement he's making, he is hypothesizing that this is the emergent therapeutic future. We must work with the whole person. This is why so many of us here, while we may have had some good experiences, maybe with talk therapy, it will not be enough unless that therapist is guiding you into your body and processing survival stress responses. It is also why just doing body work isn't enough, because it's not enough to just have your muscles and joints moved and manipulated. While that might feel wonderful, if you're not connecting with the stored survival stress in those tissues or in your nervous system, you're just moving muscles around, right? It's also why it's not enough to just cry and cry and cry, or just get angry, angry, and angry, or just keep exerting boundaries and all that. We need to have a balance with all of these parts. And what makes this work, one could say, complex and unique to all of us is that each of us is so different in how we were raised, what happened to us when we were young, all the things that occurred to us, our experiences, how we live, where we live, who we live with. And so there's no do this and then do this and do this. However, we do know that we need to work with the body. And we need to work with, as Gabor Mate said on the page previous, the survival mechanisms, the physiological mechanisms. And so, yes, awareness and connection to the body's responses is emotional intelligence, because where do emotions come from? The body. Emotions are interpreted in our brain, but they come from this body of ours. All right, next one. Back to Gabor Mate. And again, from the body says no. And for context, this is a conversation he had with another physician psychotherapist about anger. So we're going to get a bit more into anger now. So Gabor writes, in reference to psychotherapist Alan Kaplan, he points out that both repression and rage, excuse me, I'll say that one more time. He points out that both repression and rage represent a fear of the genuine experience of anger. Healthy anger, he says, is an empowerment and a relaxation. The real experience of anger is physiologic without acting out. The experience is one of a surge of power going through the system, along with a mobilization to attack. There is simultaneously a complete disappearance of all anxiety. I would replace that word anxiety with survival stress if I could. He then continues, when healthy anger is starting to be experienced, you don't see anything dramatic. What you see is a decrease of all muscle tension. The mouth opens wider because the jaws are more relaxed, the voice is lower, and you see all signs of muscle tension disappearing. Now, there's a lot in these two paragraphs. What I will say is sometimes when there's a threat that is real, anger will not just be anger, it will turn into a fight response. I have to hit back, I need to lash, I need to kick, or I need to get the hell out and run. And then, of course, we all know if we can't do those two things, we freeze, right? We freeze. The best way, if there is a confrontation in the case of, say, with a human, is we want to try to socially engage, right? We want to de-escalate the threat, but that is not always possible. Whereas rage, he says at the top here, he points out that both repression, so that's suppressing everything and not putting out, and rage. So rage is uncontrolled, we could say uncontrolled anger. That is where violence comes into play, right? What's the word that we would say? Blind rage. That's an English saying where you're just raging and there's no visual of what's happening. That these two things, repressing and rage, is a fear of genuine anger. And we'll get into this anger and why it's so important, and why it's so important that we learn this oddly when we're infants. And many of us don't get this through how our mother or a primary caregiver or our father, whomever it might be, plays with us when we start to experience our life force energy. This comes back to Peter's line above, where he says, this life energy, babies have this. I'll give you that this example. If anybody's had a little one, you might remember that they get to this point where their hands, especially if you're a female and you've got, or male, you've got long hair, they'll start to pull. They'll start to scratch, they'll start to hit. This isn't because they're trying to be mean. It's not. They're feeling their strength. Their muscles, this comes back to Nina Bull, their neuromuscular patterns are getting more activated. They're getting strong. They want to exert that strength. The thing to do if this occurs is to match them, to play with them. If it hurts your hair, then grab, take their little hands and do this classic tug of war, play with them, as opposed to punishing and telling them to stop. This is a true story. I've told it many times. I had a girlfriend acquaintance who had a newborn. The newborn is no longer a newborn. He's like 10. But when he was a newborn, he started doing this. He started scratching and hitting and pulling. And in our cultures, we just don't really understand what that is. We think there's something wrong. And I said to her, I said, oh, he's just finding his muscles. He wants to play with you. He wants you to see how strong he is. So the next time he does that, try this. And the part of the story that was quite shocking is she, as you do in this day and age, she Googled it. She Googled, what do you do when your baby is hitting you? And the first response that came back from Google, and this just shows how disconnected we are, what do you think? Hit the baby back. But this is common. The other thing was pinch them, like give them a pinch so that they feel a pain and then they don't do it again. This is very Pavlovian. If you remember the experiments of Ivan Pavlov with the bell and the dog and the salivation, you can do that with a human. You can condition them to stop exerting their life force exuberance by punishing them through pain. We know this through the way various organizations torture people to get information. It's the same thing. So I said to her, I said, well, the next time he pulls or bites, A, don't bite back, don't hit, play. Do a little game, do a little fun, do a little dance, right? Have energy, do some fun movements as opposed to a punishment. And what she said was she did that once, and then he never punched, he never bit, he never pulled ever again. So he just needed that one connection for mama to go, oh, she sees me. She sees how strong I am. That gives that little one confidence to know their force and their healthy aggression is okay. But if you squash that, which is so common, you then start to put a little human into repression. This is also another reason why, at least in North America here and in many places, it is detrimental to not let kids move and run and play and rough and tumble a little bit. It's so important. If you were to imagine taking a litter full of kitties and puppies, kittens and puppies, and you ask them or made them not move and play, that would not be possible, right? If you've ever had a litter of little mammals, they want to play. They want to play with each other. And so super important to let that life force move out. All right, page four. The one thing I will say, because a few people have said, I remember people telling me to bite them back. So this is accurate, right? This is stuff that's we're told. And someone said, I remember my mom biting me. This is where if there's a pain, an emotion, a feeling of sadness, grief around that, or you have adult children or you have children and you didn't know. You didn't know. That's what they told you to do. That's where you have to have compassion for yourself, for others, and they just didn't know, right? This is just part of our very Western society is to not see infants as little beings that need to express their energy. It's so important. All right, page four. Ah, I just said that. Oddly. So there's some alignment for you. So why it's important to let emotions move and do their thing. And bearing in mind, if we have been under repression, if we have suppressed and thwarted our emotional responses, our physiological responses for a lifetime, even letting these things out, we want to occur with titration, to go back to that word of titration, right? We want this ability to, again, back to that swimming pool. We don't want to just dump that pool over. Right. I've never used that visual, but if you have this pool with all this water and beach balls, if you just dump it out, it's just going to be a mess. We want to do little bits, little bits, little bits. And that's why, myself, for example, or my colleagues, we don't love the act of cathartic practices. Cathartic is a word that you would use to describe just taking all of your rage and emotion and just getting it out in one go. Some workshops will do things where they'll give people plastic baseball bats and these pillows, and you just hit and you just get the rage out. And it was very, very common in the 80s. All sorts of things. I think EST was the first one that kind of got people together to process this. They knew they were on the right direction. They knew anger and rage had to get processed and healthy aggression, but they didn't understand the importance of building foundation and capacity first. Because what can happen is if we get too much of this out too quickly, the system will be destabilized. It won't know what happened. And then a person can feel very euphoric and good for a while, but then what do you think occurs? Crash, right? So, first line on page four. So, why it's important to get these emotions, sensations out, they let us know that we're alive. That's the word. And we need to remember that we're alive. Even though I can guarantee all of you here are alive, breathing, your heart's beating, we can be living with numbness and not even know that we have this body or feelings or expressions or impulses. So by moving these emotions, moving these sensations, getting feeling back online, we become and we feel more alive. And people will say, and I know some of the alumni here will back me up here, but as you move forward in this journey, you might start to feel a little weird. And by that, I mean something feels strange. I don't feel like myself. What's going on? Am I having a nervous breakdown? But what it is you're feeling alive. You're feeling your body in space. And that can take a little bit of time. Yeah, someone just said, thank you, disorienting. The classic movie that shows that is The Matrix, when Keanu Reeves, who played Neo, was out of the Matrix, and he was disoriented. The light was blinding his eyes, and Morpheus said, "Well, that's because you've never seen before until now. You've never used your eyes." So you also might find that things just look crisper, and that's because your visual centers are more on. There's more acuity, there's more depth, right? Things aren't just 2D. So that is all in service of this importance of feeling alive. Next line down. Again, this is in service of why we want to be with our emotions and let them move. They give us important cues. That's the first word, cues, about our interoception and neuroception. I haven't used the word neuroception very often, but this word was coined by Stephen Porges, who put the polyvagal theory kind of on the map. Neuroception is just a fancy way of saying perception of safety or perception of danger. So, our neurological perception of the world around us and if we are safe in it or not safe in it. Next line down, when we trap emotions, they accumulate. Again, back to the swimming pool beach ball analogy. This creates toxic stress. So, this is where we could bring in the toxic concept of there's just too much. There's too much in our system. There's an overload. Because stress, positive stress, some might call it, when we have good regulation, is good. Exercising would be a positive stress. Going out into the sun and seeing the bright light and the eyes having to figure it out, that is a stress. Heat. The whole sauna, cold plunge, hydrotherapy thing is a hot topic right now. When one is smart with these things, that is a positive stress. However, you can go overboard with these practices and it can become toxic. So it's so individual, right? It's so individual, these things that we do, whether it's exercise, hydrotherapy, food, sun exposure, people. It all comes down to your capacity to stay in your what we would call window of tolerance. And I won't get into that today. I'll do more on this in later calls. But to be able to stay in this lane where you're not getting overly activated or shut down. And so one of the things is you become more full with capacity and you have more foundation and you start to grow regulation, is you will find that your ability to handle everyday stressors increases. But it doesn't mean bad stress, it can be good stress. All right, next line down. Again, around emotions and letting them do their thing. Let them move when you let them move, and we free up. That's the word free. We free up our life force energy, our life energy. And in brackets, our life force. It can be life force energy. I'm a Star Wars kid, so you know, the force, that force that binds us, that energy. And then again, from Peter Levine, another quote here, final quote, I think, of this call is, as people learn to master their emotions, they also begin to harness the underlying impulses to action. That is such an important sentence. I'll say it again. As you learn to master your emotions, you also begin to harness the underlying impulses to action. So many of our survival responses are baked in the freeze response and the collapse response, the procrastination response, the resistance response. I can't do that. That's dangerous. This can go back to how we were treated as toddlers when we were exploring our world. If we had a parent that constantly was telling us, you're going to hurt yourself, don't go up on that, you're going to hurt yourself, or that's dirty, don't touch that. All these things that gets imprinted into our physiology, right? And this comes back to again why it's so important to get into the body and feel how it wants to move, how it wants to express. This also ties in with those baby live videos. Do you remember those from the potent posture lesson? That little baby that we filmed rolling, exploring, crawling. A lot of us, I know I'm one of these kids, was not given that opportunity. I was in a walker. I was in a thing. I was in a jolly jumper. You know, I was in a crib. I'm sure many of us were in cribs. Again, it's not our parents' fault. They just didn't know. But interesting story. Recently, a friend was staying with us and they have an 8-year-old, and we have a lot of open space where we live to get onto the floor and roll around. And as soon as he ran into the house, the first thing he did was lay down on the ground and started rolling around and stretching. And his parents don't demonstrate that. It was just this impulse because there was open space. But if you think about so many of our spaces, it's just furniture and coffee tables and bookcases, and there's very rarely open space to sprawl out and roll around. But kids need that to develop their patterns of muscle movement and spinal curves. But us as humans also need, bigger humans, adults also need that space. So that's a very long way of saying, to go back to Peter's quote here, as we learn to master these sensations, these emotions, we start to feel those biological impulses to act. And it's not just an act of survival, it's an act of play, right? Movement, dance, stomping our feet, singing, expressing, all these things. So, final sentence there. This enters the completion. Enter the completion. Enter the completion. That's the word. A stored up anger, aggressive responses, procedural memories. That's the word in brackets, procedural memories, and the uncovering of healthy aggression. I'll read this again. Enter the completion of stored up anger, aggressive responses, procedural memories, and the uncovering of healthy aggression. So part of our healing and regulation, or gaining more regulation, is moving stored survival responses of the variety of anger and healthy aggression out of our system. That could be we were attacked, we know that we were attacked in various ways, and we never got to push, we never got to fight, we never got to scratch, kick, scream. We never got to run. It could be accidents. I didn't have time to slam on the brakes. I didn't have time to cover my eyes. I saw something really horrific. And it could also be, and this is more developmental, wow, yeah, I was never that baby that got to roll around on the ground. And a lot of babies, a lot of adults will say, yeah, my parents said I never crawled. Some babies skip that step. I don't think that that's supposed to happen. I think it gets skipped because we have space that doesn't allow us to crawl. And so what do? We, you'll see this. A kid will pop themselves up on a coffee, they'll pull themselves up with a coffee table and walk around the edges of it. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. But if that happens too prematurely, they're not going to have solidity in how their center of mass moves over their ankle joints. Their ears haven't been trained to be inverted, which is what happens when you crawl. And there's a lot of adults that I now have trouble with vertigo. They have trouble going upside down. They get dizzy, all these things. And so those patterns are so important. So sometimes the completion of stored up stuff, it could be anger, it could be aggressive responses, it could be healthy aggression, but sometimes it's just this desire to play, this desire to express. It isn't always about anger. All right, page five. Final page. Before I get into page five, I just want to make sure I wrap that thought up. I just said a lot around human development, infant development. This will naturally start to be in your awareness as you get into more of the Feldenkraisian lessons in future labs, where there's more rolling, where there's more working with the head and eyes, working with the hands. And also, towards the end of the labs, I blend those with sound. You'll get into working with sounds, which are called the VU and the VU-A, which has been sort of popularized via Peter Levine as a way to move energy through the gut, through the throat. And again, so much of our culture in the West is devoid of good ritual. You know, singing, chanting, dancing, playing. Certain cultures do it a bit more, but we've sort of forgotten that need to play and let this sort of exuberance come out of little humans. So part of this work isn't just deep, hard trauma work. It's also getting into the body and playing more and expressing, especially if you didn't get that when you were young. All right, page five. So this is a bit more on releasing and deactivating stored traumatic procedural memories. That's a mouthful. And again, just a reference, this is really covered in Biology of Stress video number five. So again, a reminder, traumatic procedural memory, that is that memory of a procedure that never got to complete or express. Again, it's the I was attacked. I couldn't fight. The ball hit my head. I couldn't cover my eyes. I was in a car accident. I wasn't able to swerve and get out of the way, and I crashed. It could also be falling and not having the chance to express the pain, the frustration, the shaking response. This is actually really, really common for those who were brought up with sport, which I came from the sporting background and athletic background, and I don't believe we should do a lot of that with little kids where they are being forced to perform, fall, and get back upright again and keep going. This is very common in the sports like figure skating and especially gymnastics. I'm sure we have a few people here who did gymnastics as kiddos. Be very gentle with yourself. You won't remember all the times you fell and wanted to just lay there on the mat and cry, and you had to get up. In those instances, you are storing a procedural memory of wanting to shake, wanting to stretch, wanting to cry, wanting to have your mom or your coach, help you. And often it's like, get up, get up, get up. So again, I give you these examples because it's not always like terrible, terrible abuse. It can be these things that we deem really good in our society. Oh, that person was a great this, that person was a great that. Even being intellectual, right? Not being able to express yourself in creativity. And mom and dad said, you got to do math. You've got to do this. You're not going to make anything of yourself if you be an artist or if you be a this, right? And that also stifles a person's ability to express if they want to do something, but they have to follow what the family wants. So I like to give a little bit of examples because it's not just big shock traumas. It's very cultural. So, first line, it is impossible. It's the first word. It is impossible for us to predict when we might have an emotional release or have a procedural memory, that's the next word, that wants to be deactivated or renegotiated. So I'll read that one more time. It is impossible for us to predict when we might have an emotional release or have a procedural memory that wants to be deactivated or renegotiated. Deactivated and renegotiated is a fancy way of saying let out, processed. Those are words from somatic experiencing. Next line. This is why it is essential that we build solid nervous system foundations. That's the next word. Foundations. Grow our internal capacity. Or you could just for short say capacity, and have tried and practiced tools and resources at our disposal. So this is why it's essential we build solid nervous system foundations, grow our capacity, and have tried and practiced tools and resources at our disposal. And then the next line, so this is why we want these things. We want these things because we might miss, that's the word miss, something that's important and not even know it. So, what this essentially means is as you build your capacity, as you build your foundations, as you get more regulated, as you open up to go back to the first few pages of today's call. The sensations in the body, the interoception, your sixth sense is coming on, you're taking out the balls from your swimming pool, you're just getting more capacity. You may find something move through you at a very inopportunistic time when it's not the right time, right? And this goes back to that call about when to resource, when not to resource, when to orient, when not to orient. If you are driving down the highway, and something happens that sparks a memory of an old car accident, and you're going 100 miles an hour, not the time to start releasing a procedural memory. That's where you might have to ground and resource and orient. But that's where, okay, I got to pull over, or when I get home, then I'm going to go back into that felt sense that was there, that was starting to come up. My personal one that will always stand out to me, there's a few. But one was getting on an airplane. This was years ago when I was starting to come out of my freeze. And I have no fear of flying. I used to fly myself. And I was walking down the thing before you got into the plane, and I had that overwhelming heart rate just start to pound, sweat, fear, and then my brain started to think, can I get my luggage off? Maybe I have to cancel my flight. And all my reason went out the window, and it was like, no. And I had to talk to myself. I had to resource. You got to get on this plane. The plane isn't dangerous. There is something coming up that is old. And I stayed with it. I resourced, got on the plane. Everything was fine. But that is an old survival stress coming up. And it's important to at least acknowledge. Would I have liked to have sat down and just felt it? Yes, but I had to get on the plane, right? So again, this is where you have to be creative when these things start to move through and up and out. Because as I said, we might miss something if we're not aware of what these things are. So what I'm referring to, someone asked, there's a training call, I think it's training call number two, where I get into the, I think I call it the four whens or something like that. When to resource, when to orient, when to take a deep breath, and when and what to do when you don't know what to do. So just look for that call, the training call. All right, last little bit here. So when working with and moving and freeing up stored anger and harnessing healthy aggression. So again, this call is just an entry into working with healthy aggression and anger. We're priming this a little bit. Next week's training call is not part two, it's the next week after. But the reason I have these titrated in is so that the energy, the concept of healthy aggression, stored anger is in your awareness. It becomes part of your field. So when we work with these things, I've got two phases here. Now, the only reason I have phases b is because English language and human language is such that we have to describe things in a linear way. So this doesn't mean that it is always going to be this way, but this is how I'm teaching it for now. So phase one, when we're working with anger and harnessing healthy aggression, we want to connect with the inner experience. Inner is the word. So in other words, let's just say I'm driving on the highway and someone cuts me off and I get really mad. What would that inner experience be? It would be probably my heart getting a bit tight. My hands are probably going to grip that steering wheel. And my impulse might be to go chase that person down. Of course, I'm not going to do that because that's not conducive to anything good. But there is that, some swear words might come out, loser, blah, 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 all that stuff. There is an inner experience. And then in brackets, there's a felt sense, a sensation, a feeling. Phase two, discover what, if any, movement. There's a lot of words here. Movement, emotion, word, sound, texture, etc., might be there, ready and waiting to be experienced, processed, expressed, integrated. So this actually happened recently. That's why I used the car thing. I was cut off to the point where if I was not fully aware, I would have completely been side smashed into a thing going like 100 kilometers an hour. And I got really mad, like really mad. And of course, I'm not going to speed and chase that person down. And of course, we both ended up at the exact same stop sign because that's how it always works. And so my inner experience was that I wanted to do something pretty mean to that person. Of course, I'm not going to do that. So phase one was I felt the anger. Phase two, discover what, if any, movement, emotion, words, sound, texture, etc., might be there. So what I did, I won't tell anyone this. I held my steering wheel and I know it's strong, so I shook it. And you'll get into more of this when we get into deeper anger and annihilation work. We call it kill energy work. As I imagine that was that person's neck. Now, I'm not going to do that in real life, but that was my desire. It was a how dare you have no awareness and almost threaten my life because we were going that fast. And then I started making faces. I started growling and I started hissing and I started ripping my teeth back and forth as if I was tearing that person apart. Again, of course, I'm not going to do that in real life, but that was my animal instinct. Because I was almost harmed. So, this is where we have these weird situations as humans where we're not in the wild, we're not in the savannah, we're in these tin cans, but we get really harmed if things aren't aware in a driving situation. And so, I let all of that out, and then everything came down. And it goes back to that paragraph that Gabor Mate quoted on page 3. About this ability to move that energy out, and afterwards there is a decrease in tension. Imagine what would have happened to my swimming pool if I had just suppressed all of that. Not good, right? Because it was a high stress situation. Speed, almost got hurt, and all the emotions that come with that. So, that is an example. Of and next line down, phase two must connect with phase one. Phase two must connect with phase one, or we could say phase one must connect with phase two. In essence, if you know the word hologram, they're happening at the same time, virtually at the same time. And when we're learning this, though, we might be a bit more piecemeal. Oh, I'm feeling a little something in my belly. Oh gosh, I want to scream. I want to squeeze. I want to hit. I want to punch. Right. But as we get better at this, these things happen almost at the exact same time. This is why, remember, I mentioned cathartic practices where you take the baseball bat and you just hit. If you go to a therapist or a workshop, or you do this by yourself, and someone says to get anger out, you need to get a bat and hit. So imagine you just get a bat and start hitting. Like we could all do that right now and pretend. It probably isn't going to do very much because there's no connection to that inner experience. And then you add in the complexity, say in a workshop setting where you have all these strangers around you, you're not sure what they're going to do. And then someone just goes crazy with that bat, and that kind of freaks you out. And then you shut down, and then you're in this mess where nobody's actually doing any proper anger work. So, again, this is so important that we're connecting this with the inner experience. Often, what I find, not always, but sometimes when there is something very deep and very old, the thinking is that this is anger. Often we think, I know I've got a lot of anger around this, and often that might be true. But typically, what do you think is under that anger? Deep, deep sadness, grief, especially in situations where there was harm, especially when you were a child and you were like, wow, no one protected me. So there's the survival, but then there's this deep feeling of emotion and sadness. And so if you find that you're doing some anger work, and then all of a sudden you're like, wait, what? Why are there tears coming out? Why am I feeling this like this pit in my stomach? Go with that, right? It might be that you need to move some of the energy with an anger response to get under to that grief and deep sadness. So again, phase two must connect with phase one. And then the final sentence there, always maintain connection to self. Self during these phases. Because again, if I just go back to that baseball bat hitting thing, you can do that, but have no connection to self. Just like you can go exercise and not know what you're doing, right? Just like you can drive down the street and not realize what you're doing. So this is why it's often not enough when people say, should I get into boxing or martial arts? I think learning a skill like that is wonderful. Nothing wrong with learning how to box or learning taekwondo or self-defense, but it often isn't enough to get to these to go back to the top of the page, these stored traumatic procedural memories. For fitness, wonderful. For getting into your body and getting more coordinated, wonderful. But these deeper trauma-held responses often need a little bit more context, not just the hitting or the punching. And yeah, frustration, someone said, where does that fit in? Frustration is just along the spectrum of anger, healthy aggression, just like irritation. Some of you might be finding that you were like the cool as a cucumber person for your entire life, and you were always the nice person. And now you're getting really irritated with people, and you're getting really testy with your partners or your parents. And you're like, whoa, where's that coming from? Right. And that can sometimes be a sign that that steam is being let out. And this is again where you have to then put your conscious hat on and be like, okay, this person didn't harm me. They don't deserve this expression. This is my own stuff. This is where many parents won't realize it, but the anger that comes out to their kids has nothing to do with their kids. It's the stored anger in their bodies that are, it's being triggered by this little human, right? And then all the stress that comes with that. So again, yes, frustration, irritation, anger, rage, it all is along a spectrum. And the key is to know when it is appropriate and when it is not. Obviously, if someone's harming you in real time, fight back, right? Get help. But if a person isn't, and you're finding that there's this venom coming out of you, I mean, we could do a whole training call on how we see this on social media comments, right? Where does that come from? That is a way of people expressing stuff in a safe, quote unquote, way. But it's often trapped survival response coming out as a defense or an offense. So like I said, this is our first entry. Always can't connect to self. That's what the final word is, self. Have fun with the lessons this week. Obviously, this was a big energy call, aggression, all these things, emotions, but that's purposeful that we're doing more gentle self-work in the diaphragm lessons this week to just keep building and building and building and building that capacity, that sense of self, that sense of touch. And then of course, if you're not yet on lab 5, just keep working on the labs that you're on, because they all funnel into the same thing. It's all about building capacity, building foundation, and not letting more balls stick into your pool, okay? That's everything for today. Thank you everyone for being here. Thanks to those who are listening to the recording. And we will keep going through the labs and the training calls and the Q&As. Keep having fun with it and also keeping a beginner's mind as much as possible. All right, everybody. Bye for now. Thank you, Leah, for being in the chat as well.